Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Laura Foggan. Along with Tom Seaman, I represent State Farm.
We welcome you. I know you were in Mid Prohack VJ for this argument, so we're pleased to have you here this afternoon to join us.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here in this beautiful courtroom.
Thank you.
In this case, the court below abused its discretion in entering a protective order at issue because the protective order does not meet the standards of Rule 26. The district court disavowed the good cause requirement by upholding the protective order regardless of any identifiable risk of harm. Mr. Clary has not explained why existing legal protections don't guard his privacy interests, and the good cause standard and the First Amendment demand that a protective order's terms be supported by particular and specific facts. Clary's order is therefore unsound both procedurally and constitutionally.
Ms. Foggan, before you get to that, as you know, we asked for supplemental briefs on the issue of mootness, and if you could speak to that issue first, we would appreciate it.
Thank you, Your Honor. I certainly will. The court has received an affidavit from Mr. Seaman laying out the facts regarding the documents that are in the possession of State Farm, as well as a supplemental brief addressing the mootness issue. As Mr. Seaman's affidavit makes clear, State Farm went to extraordinary lengths to adjust this claim without taking possession of medical records subject to the protective order. Nonetheless, the court properly can hear and dispose of this appeal. And the reasons are because the case involves an issue of great public importance and indeed involves an issue of potential constitutional dimensions, and because it presents an issue that is capable of repetition yet evading review. This case is a classic example of an instance of an important issue capable of repetition yet evading review, where State Farm, in fact, has spent years appealing the questions in this case, first for the opportunity to even be heard on the merits in the court below, and now for the opportunity to be heard in this court on the merits. In the interim, the underlying case settled. And indeed, that is precisely the circumstance that is likely to occur in other cases. State Farm will be subjected to the same actions again and again. And indeed, it already has been confronted with similar orders in trial courts in this state, including two that are currently on appeal to this court, where the trial courts denied State Farm the right to intervene and be heard on the matter of a protective order.
Excuse me for interrupting, Ms. Foggan. In your supplemental brief, you not only talked about the exceptions to mootness, but about the State Farm's retention of certain documents or some summaries of documents as an additional reason why you believe the case is not moot. Do you believe that those documents that State Farm still has in its possession are documents that are subject to the protective order?
Your Honor, I do not believe that the documents in State Farm's protection are governed by the protective order. The documents in State Farm's protection involve a claim committee report, certain emails, and certain handwritten notes that addressed the medical records that were produced to the defendant and were viewed by representatives of State Farm that traveled to the defendant defense counsel's offices to view those documents.
And which are likely within some work product privilege or attorney-client privilege?
Yes, at least many of those documents are, Your Honor. Those documents are not subject to the order which addresses medical records. The order does not appear to address these other materials. I understand there may be some question in that regard that's been raised by other parties, but State Farm's position is that those particular documents are not directly subject to the order. There are other uses of the information that State Farm believes it is entitled to make under applicable regulatory law in Colorado, and those uses are still uses that could be made of this information going forward: rate making, anti-fraud efforts, reinsurance considerations potentially. There are a variety of statutorily permitted uses of information that are being blocked by the protective order in this case.
And Ms. Foggan, how does this evade review?
It evades review in the sense that by the time the issue can be presented to this court, the underlying matter is likely to have resolved itself. That is, the time for State Farm to present itself as a possible intervener, to get a ruling on a motion to intervene, to have to potentially appeal the ruling of the trial court with respect to its right to be heard, as it had to in this case, and as two other cases before this court show, is a recurring problem, and then go back to the trial court and present itself on the merits, is such a lengthy period that the underlying claim may have proceeded to trial or settled in the interim before the case can get back before this court on the merits to be heard. These are very important issues. They are issues where the trial court, although it has discretion to enter protective orders, ignores the fact that that discretion is cabined by Rule 26. Clary concedes that what constitutes good cause depends on the facts of each particular case, yet he pointed to no facts that make his particular case different from every other personal injury suit. The trial court authority over case management is premised on the court's familiarity with the particular facts and needs of each case. Here, the court openly entered a sweeping protective order without reference to any facts specific to Mr. Clary's position, holding, again, the protective order was warranted regardless of any identifiable risk of harm. We submit that that was clear error. Instead of looking at particularized harm, the court below relied on conclusory statements about the importance of an individual's interests in the privacy of medical records and speculative fears about what was alleged to be uncontrolled disclosure of those records without any showing that that disclosure would take place or of harassment or undue embarrassment to Mr. Clary. And in fact, Mr. Clary's concerns, his speculative fears about the alleged lack of control over his documents are unfounded.
Didn't you just say that some of the information contained in the reports that you do have in your possession could be used for different insurance purposes, and that might be some of the fear that Mr. Clary has about the unwarranted use of his medical records?
Your Honor, I did say that that the medical data or information might be used for those purposes. However, those are not uncontrolled purposes or unauthorized purposes. They are purposes that are specifically set out in Colorado insurance regulations that govern insurers' use of protected personal health information. And those regulations, in the first instance, protect the privacy of personal health information. And they set out that an insurer may not disclose that information or use that information without the claimant's authorization, except for authorized insurance functions. That's the law in Colorado. So anything that State Farm does with medical information that comes into its possession is already governed by a regulation that carefully controls personal health information in the possession of a liability insurer.
And if Mr. Clary would like to restrict further that use of his medical information, could he not do so through the form of requesting a protective order, as he has done?
Your Honor, if there were a particularized need for protection that met the good cause standard, an application could be made to the trial court. That is correct. However, I submit that these existing privacy protections make it much less likely that any given tort plaintiff will be able to demonstrate a particularized need for protection from harm, from embarrassment, or undue harassment as a result of the use of his or her information.
Ms. Foggin, excuse me for interrupting, but in the West Virginia cases, in Bedell 2 or Marks, I don't remember specifically whether it was one or the other or both, the court essentially rejected the argument that you're making to us now, saying that it's still the responsibility of courts to decide whether a protective order should be entered on behalf of a plaintiff, and if so, the extent of that protective order and expressly declined to just defer to the existence of state regulations. What is your response to the decision in that case?
Your Honor, it's a subtle point. And so I want to state it and hope that I can be understood in my point, which is that I do disagree with the outcome in West Virginia. I don't disagree that trial courts have the authority and responsibility to supervise discovery that's taking place in a case before them. However, that responsibility and authority of the trial court is cabined by Rule 26. And here, there are existing protections. And the trial court's responsibility is to take into account those existing protections, determine if there is a need for further protection, and if so, whether there are burdens imposed by that further protection that outweigh the benefits of issuing restrictions on the use of the medical information.
Well, could you give us an example of circumstances where the scenario you're describing might occur? Because the plaintiff is basically saying, I'm concerned about my privacy, and therefore I should have a protective order. State Farm is saying the state regulations are enough to protect the plaintiff's privacy. And then you're saying, well, there may be some circumstances where a plaintiff could allege something more specific, but that's why I'm asking, can you give us an example of what kind of circumstance a plaintiff might actually be able to identify?
Your Honor, there are several examples where a plaintiff might identify a particularized circumstance. Perhaps there is some unique sensitivity to the plaintiff's information. We've seen historically President Clinton had a claim under his personal homeowners coverage. That might be a circumstance where unique protections would be required. I don't know precisely what the circumstances would be, but they would be based on a particularized showing of fact to the trial court of why it would be harmful for that information to be used in anti-fraud efforts, for example, which are authorized by statute and supported by a strong public interest of their own in Colorado.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I'm having trouble envisioning a situation where any plaintiff might be able to identify any kind of particularized circumstance that might fit the circumstances you're describing.
Well, I think in the majority of circumstances, an individual plaintiff would not meet that standard. That's exactly correct. Essentially, what the legislature did was assign to the Division of Insurance the responsibility for regulating insurer use of private health information. And in doing so, the Division of Insurance saw the need for protection of privacy, anticipated that need, took action to protect it, permitted only certain activities by insurers, and offered a prophylactic protection for all claimants, be they in litigated cases or not, who provided protected health information to insurers. So in the routine garden variety circumstance, we submit that protection is appropriate and is sufficient. However, there might very well be unique circumstances that the court should consider if facts are so shown. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Very well, Ms. Foggin.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Todd Travis for James Clark. One of the things that we're, if we take the, not the defendant, State Farm's argument at face value, it really, you're overturning AT versus State Farm. AT versus State Farm said, in order to protect the confidentiality of the records, we have to do something affirmatively, we being Mr. Clary. We did that in this case. We didn't send a single medical record to State Farm or to counsel for the defendant until we had the protective order in place. Now, they're trying, State Farm is saying we have to show a particular harm. I think when you actually look at the district court versus City and County of Denver, which was cited to in the brief by Judge Lemon, that's the specific basis, as well as the privacy statute of 25.1.1201. That gives us the basis for it. It is a paramount importance to the citizens of Colorado for the protection of confidentiality. We don't want medical records such as somebody with, I don't know, AIDS, HIV, hepatitis C, all these other communicable diseases that can go that can be out, or something that is embarrassing to just be out in the record. State Farm, we had no problems with State Farm getting the records to evaluate the case for settlement purposes, and that is appropriate.
But I guess, Mr. Travis, that what Ms. Foggin is suggesting is that if a plaintiff has AIDS or some other embarrassing condition, then that would be the case in which it would be appropriate to request the issuance of a protective order. Whereas here, there's nothing in the record that indicates that Mr. Clary has any kind of embarrassing condition, as far as I know.
There was an embarrassing condition that was for Mr. Clary that he did not want to go to the Medical Information Bureau. When they're talking about redistribution of the records, one of those is to what's called the Medical Information Bureau, which is run by the insurance industry. Each insurance company contributes to that. And what it does is they put the information in for purposes of such, for example, if you want to apply for life insurance down the road. So they can't put one of those medical conditions in that format, for example, AIDS, hepatitis C. So what they do is they use a code. And I don't know exactly what the code is, but I think it's like code 96. If you have a code 96 that comes up when you're looking for a medical information bureau, when somebody applies for life insurance, every insurance company looks at that. And what they do is they see code 96, you're either not going to get the insurance or it's going to be extremely, extremely expensive because it's going to be surcharged. Mr. Clary had one of those conditions.
Is that in the record?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, because I specifically protected that under Alcon versus Weil, and we did an extreme detailed privilege block on that. But that's the reason why we went to do this in this case. And I don't want to put on the record what exactly that condition is for obvious reasons.
Excuse me, Mr. Travis.
Yes.
Let me ask you at that point, did you say anything like that in your motion for the protective order without identifying the specific particular condition that you're talking about?
That's a hard question to answer because when you do a privilege log, you have to sit there and, in essence, give a basis for the reason why you're not disclosing the record. And so we put the reason for it in there is a medical condition or body part not at issue in this lawsuit, and then we cited to Alcon and Weil. I don't believe some district court judges are unclear as to what was to be included in that privilege log. For example, if it's just colds or flus, that's not a big deal. But if it is a confidential, do you disclose that confidential, and then in which case you just waived it?
Well, I'm not saying that you disclose the confidential information or the particular condition.
Sure.
I'm asking whether you put in your motion for protective order that there is such a particular condition that Mr. Clary doesn't want to disclose or have disclosed.
I did not, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I did that because I believe that it didn't need to be disclosed, but I didn't want to, and that's why I did the protective order, or the reason for the protective order, and that's why I did the privilege law.
And let me back up just 1 minute.
Sir.
Sorry to take up your time here, but with regard to your first statement, are you saying that it's your position that the state statute regarding confidentiality of medical records is sufficient, or is the justification for the protective order, in your opinion, that supplants the particularized interest that Ms. Foggin?
No, I think
Foggin is talking.
We have two competing interests here. One is for the Division of Insurance to make sure that there's the anti-fraud positions, all the arguments State Farm is making. But we also have just as valid and equal statute that says privacy of medical records is important. And so then you would have to do the balancing test to see what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. Here, we gave the records to Patricia Cohn's counsel. We gave the records to the independent medical examiners or the Rule 35A examiners. They had sufficient information to be able to do that. What we don't want is now that State Farm has the medical information, and medical information is broader than medical records. Because State Farm doesn't have the records is not the issue. The issue is they have the medical information. If they take the information from the medical records, when the adjuster came over to State Farm Counsel's office and wrote down everything that was in the medical records, that is still medical information. That's still considered private and protected under Colorado law. So that's the problem that I'm having, is I believe that the information that they have is still considered medical information and is still bound and protected by privacy laws.
However, doesn't the protective order itself refer to medical records and not medical information?
It does, Your Honor.
Says who has the plaintiff's medical records, reports, employment records, or scholastic records.
And number two says any agent or third party, specifically State Farm, to whom the confidential records and materials are provided to are specifically prohibited from inputting the confidential medical records and information into the database. So medical records are specifically, if I take somebody's x-ray or if I take somebody's pap smear or breast exam or something to that, that's different. But if you take the conclusions of that, something that's embarrassing in a pap smear exam, that's still the same thing. That's medical information. And that's what we're trying to prohibit. We don't want the confidential information of Mr. Clary going to other databases where we have no control. State Farm has no control over what happens. It's kind of like trying to put, the best way I can describe it is trying to put barbed wire in a paper bag. Once it's out there, you can't do it without actually destroying the information or destroying the bag in that analogy or that metaphor. What ends up happening in this case is once it goes out to the Medical Information Bureau, some of these other agencies, they have their own standards for confidentiality. We had no control. State Farm can change their privacy policy tomorrow, and I have no right to do anything about it. We won't even know about it. They could turn around and sit there and change it. And what would end up happening is that Mr. Clary wouldn't have to be notified, just like it would be with, for example, your credit bureaus. Right now, that's considered confidential information. If you have three agencies that control our credit information for every individual, you have the right to review that. And my understanding is like 60% of those are inaccurate. We have no idea what State Farm puts into their database and then distributes to other third parties. Assuming that that's 100% accurate, we have no way of doing anything with it, or 100% inaccurate, or somewhere in between. I can't even review that because that's State Farm's own internal process.
Mr. Travis, in your view, are there any circumstances where a plaintiff could ask for a protective order where the district court would be justified in denying that request?
Yes.
What are those circumstances?
Those circumstances would be once they've already been disclosed. For example, I believe that there's some attachments for some recent orders that Mr. Seaman put in the brief where they already disclosed the Social Security number. They already disclosed some of the things. Once it's out there, I don't think you can turn around and claim a privilege for that. Or if it's been obtained through other means, if it's been obtained in a public forum. For example, if you look at, I think there was a Colorado legislature just recently who got a DUI and she was taken to a medical facility. I mean, theoretically, just that information, is the medical information of where the facility she was taken to is considered medical, confidential medical information. But she's a public figure and that's in the newspaper. So I think that that's deemed waived. Once it's out and or I turn around and I send it in a confidential settlement package, what's typical is for these type of claims is the plaintiff tries to settle the claim with the insurance company. And then we submit a voluminous amount of records, and what ends up happening, they evaluate those records, and then an offer is made, and you either settle the case or you don't. If you don't settle, obviously you file suit. You can't go back and unring the bell and try to sit there and say the records that I gave voluntarily to try to evaluate somehow are now privileged. I've waived those. But we didn't do that in this case purposely.
Mr. Travis, how can you get relief in this case? State Farm's already made a representation that they don't possess any of the medical records.
They say they don't have the medical records, but they have the medical information contained in a separate file.
And so what's your suggestion that some order that compels them to return to you any information they have?
No, there's two real pragmatic ways to handle this. One is to have State Farm destroy the paper file of what the summary of the medical information is. If there's any review that the Division of Insurance or any of the fears that they have occur, then Counsel, Mr. Patterson has those that he has to retain for malpractice purposes, or I believe it's, it was changed from 7 years to 10 years. So he will have those in his file for 10 years.
Well, what if the response from State Farm is, we've got nothing that isn't protected by the work product privilege and our attorney-client privilege? So you can have a court issue an order if you like, but that's privileged information and you're not getting that.
I don't have any desire to get the information. My desire is to make sure that it's not distributed, turned around and converted for other purposes. State Farm's purposes for rate making and for internal audits, that has nothing to do with Mr. Clary. I don't believe Mr. Clary waived any rights when he gave the information so that State Farm can sit there and make sure that the adjuster for performance reviews adequately handled the claim in accordance with State Farm's internal policies. And that's the problem that I'm having. I'm not interested necessarily in having, looking at and seeing what the confidential information is. I just want a letter, and we've never gotten a letter that's saying this information was destroyed by State Farm in any way, shape, or form. And that was one of the questions the court asked me to address upon final settlement. Anybody who has it will return those to plaintiff's counsel or certify in writing. I, to this day, don't know except for what I just received in the affidavit on the supplemental brief. So to my knowledge, up to now, the independent medical examiners or the Rule 35 doctors, they still have them. I have no idea, could they use those for research purposes, for accreditation purposes? There's a myriad of different ways that this information, once it's distributed, can go out, and it's almost like a branch of a tree, and it just keeps going out until you got all these leaves all over the place where you don't know where it's gonna go. And I believe you have the right to protect the confidentiality of your own medical records. So, I know I have 2 minutes left, but I'm going to leave it at that unless the court has any further questions.
I have another question.
Sure.
Have you ever seen any of these summaries that were prepared by State Farm?
There's something called an index, bro. There's something called a...
In this case, concerning Mr. Clary, not
in not other general. Cases I have, Your Honor, but I have not in this particular case.
So you don't know what is in those summaries?
That's correct.
How much information, whether it was copied verbatim from the medical records that they reviewed in defendant's counsel's office?
For example, if hypothetically Jay Clary had hepatitis C, and that was in the medical records, and State Farm has that, to now be able to allow them to put that into the Medical Information Bureau would severely have an effect on Mr. Clary and his ability to get life insurance. And I'm using that just as an illustration purposes. But there are things in Mr. Clary's medical records. I do not believe that the private issue that concerned Mr. Clary is in those records for specifically this. But the volume of records for this case, Mr. Clary was severely injured, and the medical records were probably a foot and a half to 2 feet thick. There could be some reference that slipped in there somewhere, but didn't become an issue in this case.
So you don't,
for settlement purposes.
So you don't think that this particular condition that Mr. Clary does not want revealed was in the medical records that State Farm reviewed?
I did my best to redact that out as much as possible. Unfortunately, with doctor's records, sometimes you see that you can't read them too well, and there might be some reference in there. That's what I'm trying to protect in this case. So I see I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Travis.
Your Honor, I have 3 points. Number one, Mr. Travis mentioned the case of AT versus State Farm, and I just want to be clear to the court that that case predated the adoption of Colorado's insurance regulations governing privacy of health information in the possession of insurers. So it's not relevant. It's a red herring for today's standards under existing Colorado law. Second, Mr. Travis is referring to another mechanism which the trial court utilized, which affords protection, and that is the Alcon versus Spicer arrangement where only medical records relevant to the tort claim are discoverable and others are not, may be put on a privilege log and may be contested in terms of their discovery and production at all. That is a process that Mr. Travis followed and that protected Mr. Clary here. I am not aware of a sensitive medical condition that was at issue in the materials that were produced. Certainly, that's something that first is within the purview of the trial court, affords protection, is another device to manage discovery that can and should be utilized before a protective order like this one is enacted. Mr. Clary suggests the burdens on State Farm's business functions are immaterial to the good cause analysis, or perhaps support his suggestion that they invade his privacy. But in fact, the good cause standard requires courts to balance the various interests of the parties and potentially interested non-parties in the design of a protective order. And here, the trial court's protective order didn't do that. It impeded State Farm's ability to meet regulatory requirements, such as requirements requiring it to retain claim files for market conduct examinations, requiring it to maintain claim files under Illinois law. It prohibited the use of any electronic database, including State Farm's electric claim file, which is the basic mechanism used by State Farm to meet its obligations to efficiently and effectively process claims, so that people had to literally travel and view documents by hand in hard copy in the offices of defense counsel. And while those extraordinary measures were followed in this case, they are untenable as a means of operation of the modern insurance business in today's world.
Ms. Foggin, your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Thank you to all of you for your argument, and well, to the two of you for your arguments this afternoon. We appreciate it, and the case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course. Again, Ms. Foggin, we appreciate your coming here from Washington for the oral arguments this afternoon. Now we'll proceed.